That reminds me, speaking of crime, did you... many poems are crimes against men's aesthetic sensibilities. But do I have to explain it to you? But crime, of course. I think crime is the one area that draws out the most creativity in modern man. This is where real. That reminds me, speaking of crime, did you, many poems are crimes against men's aesthetic sensibilities. But, do I have to explain it to you? But crime, of course, I think crime is the one area that draws out the most creativity in modern man. This is where really creativity is being done. It's a fact. Arts are languishing. You realize that that we are not right in the same league with the Renaissance in painting. And it's people try awful hard, but they keep turning out the it's kind of discouraging. No matter what you do, you wind up looking a little like Andy Warhol, and that's not exactly in the same realm with the Dutch interiorists. No way, Hals, these Vermeer, these men who laid it down. Well, for one reason, why we can't do this is it's hard. It's hard. If you've ever looked at a Dutch painting, you wonder how the hell they could paint that. I mean, using those little things with the little sticks with the hair on the end, and using the stuff that comes out of the tubes. How could he do that? Have you ever seen one of those fantastic Dutch paintings? The interiors, Vermeer, Hals, all these guys. You say, holy God, it looks better than any Kodachrome, That's right. And much better. It looks like the people are going to jump right out, drinking beer and eating cheese and yelling and hollering and dancing the schottische or whatever it is they're doing. Those natives are all sitting around. So it's hard. And man today is not prepared to do things the hard way. I think this is basically the problem. Most things are too hard. Have you noticed that? Yeah, it's really too hard. For example, one of the reasons why a lot of people don't write the novel, it's hard to write a novel. Having done a lot of writing myself, I can attest to it. It's very hard. It's very hard. It takes a long time. Yeah, In God We Trust, 6 years. Boom. Well, this is tantamount to in the average guy's world of being asked to build the pyramids with his erector set. It's not easy. It's not, it's hard. And we don't like hard things, things that are difficult to learn. I think one of the reasons why a lot of people have been turned off of skiing, they find it's hard. I mean, next thing you know, you're going down the hill, spinning like a top. Your head is hitting against fence posts and stumps, and they just don't show that, in the après-ski shops. You go back up to the top of the hill and you start down again, and you don't even go that far. The next thing you know, you're airborne and people are screaming, and you wake up at Bellevue after a helicopter flight from some elegant ski resort in the northern states. And so skiing is hard. So most people who go skiing spend a hell of a lot of time standing around fireplaces, drinking hot rum drinks, and showing off their jackets. Yes, I know one guy who doesn't ski at all, but he goes skiing every weekend. He doesn't. He really doesn't. He has a fantastic collection of jackets. He has a lot of padded pants, really groovy ones, made out of all kinds of silver cloth with little stars all over them. And he collects patches. He's got, places like St. Moritz, Dermot, Grenoble. And he's got them all over his jackets. And he walks in, and people just, wow. And by the way, he's got a portable, the most beautiful touch he's got. He's got a portable cast, and he straps it on his leg, and he comes stumping in. See, he doesn't ski, but he goes to all the ski resorts. And incidentally, he has now marketed his portable cast for people who don't ski but like to go skiing. Sit around in the. Yeah, you can buy either. He has the elbow cast, which is kind of, but the elbow cast is not too convenient because it gets in the way of your drinking and that. And that's very necessary in après ski. Also, it's hard to put your sweater on when you get the cast. So he's got a magnificent thigh-length cast. And it's ventilated, by the way. Well, that comes for the advanced skiers, the one with the head thing, yes. But it goes down from the groin, if I may use that word on the radio. It goes all the way down, covers the entire foot, and it's kind of nice. And it's got little pockets fit in. The public can't see this. You can keep your flask in there and various other things, a little black book for chicks and stuff. And the cast straps on, and you go stumping in that sugar loaf with your cast, wearing your jacket. And by the way, he also has a nice line of foreign ski patches, which he now sells. Samritz is one of the best sellers. You put these all over your jacket. You can buy this jacket any place, and Fort Herman's has got a nice collection of them. And you put these patches on, and you go stumping in. And you don't say anything. Never be caught lying. Don't ever do that. The worst thing you can do is to lie. You're not lying. You're wearing a cast, and nobody can deny that you are. And you don't say what happened to your leg because people don't like to talk about a guy's injury. You come in with a little pain on your face, and you come stumping in, and somebody says, "Oh, gee," and of course you got Zermatt, big patch. Another one says Samritz. Another one says the killer run at Grenoble. It shows, by the way, he has a wonderful patch that's almost exact, lifelike. You can't tell it from the real thing. In fact, you iron it on. It's an autograph by Jean-Paul Killy. And you can buy it with your own name. It says, "To Fred," from a fellow skier, Jean-Paul Killy. So you just put this on your patch, you know, and then you walk in, you stump in, and everybody knows that. You know, the big daddy has arrived in the ski world. And, by the way, he has a set of head skis that are fantastic. He's adapted for the non-skier. These are a set of head skis that are battered. They're all pre-battered. They're scratched and beaten up. And they fold so that you can carry them in your briefcase. They snap together. And you carry your skis in. Now, most people don't like to carry skis. You notice that, Jerry? Because they're heavy. Well, these are made of cleverly treated balsa wood. They're easily carried. You're never going to ski on them, of course. So you come in with your balsa wood skis, you fling them in the corner, and you stump up to the bar. And when the man comes up, you don't order. You don't come up and you don't say, "Give me a bourbon of water." That would kill it right away. So this is very important. All these things have to be done in the proper sequence. When one has skied at Zermatt, when one has skied at Samritz, and has come down on the killer run at Grenoble, and Jean-Paul Killy has autographed his jacket, you don't come in and say, "Bourbon." What you do, you walk up to the bar, see, and you stand there, you grunt a little bit, and you move so that your cast is clearly seen by all the rest of your opera ski types. You move it, and you put it up like this, and the bartender comes over and says, "What'll it be?" You say, Pernod. Pernod, which is the proper drink for anyone who has flown down the killer run at Grenoble. One drinks Pernod. One does not drink bourbon and water. One does not say, "You got any Diet Yoo-hoo here?" No way. You say Pernod. And he says, "Water?" He says, I'll add the water, please." And at that point, he brings the Pernod over, which incidentally tastes like licorice Yoo-hoo. He brings it over, and you pour a little water in so everybody can see what you're drinking. So very carefully, you let it, like you're a chemist. See, three drops. It turns that the ghastly purple-blue, you know, and kind of a white, milky, cloudy liquid. And at that point, you settle back. It's good to be back, Henry. And Henry says, "You've been away?" And you don't say anything. You just say, "Oh, yeah. And you just grunt a little bit. You just let them see your patch. See, it's a Zermatt. And you haven't said anything. You have. If he presses you, you have to admit you've been away to the Bronx. So you just, "Chef, boy, this damn thing itches." And that's all you say, see. And he says, "Oh." And he looks over the bar, and he sees the cast, and you scratch, see. It's getting to the itchy stage. And he's not going to ask you what happened to your leg. It's obvious, incidentally. You have also put one of the autographs on right on the kneecap that says, "Tough luck, old man, Jean-Paul Killy." Well, nobody's going to argue, you know, where you got this leg. Within, I'd say, 15, 20 seconds, there are going to be at least four girls who will mysteriously appear at the bar wearing double-knit stretch suits that are unbelievably provocative. By the way, do you know that you can buy girls double-knit stretch ski suits now that have little pneumatic pockets built into them that blow up? They just use a little hand pump. And underneath all that beautiful double-knit stretch, which looks like fantastic, there's the same old Esther Jane, unfortunately. But that's all part of the game. See, so you sit there and you put your leg up. And you spend your weekend at Sugarloaf. Well, it's obvious you can't get out on a slope, not with that leg. But you carry your skis around and you stand occasionally at the base of the slope and look longingly up at, of course, the totally dedicated expert slope. You don't go stand by the beginner slope and look up. You stand and look up. Say, well, once in a while you shift your leg and you say, maybe it for the season, you know. Doc says maybe it ain't going to be good till April. Now, you haven't said anything about your leg. You haven't referred to what the doctor actually said to you. You have a friend that they just called Doc from down at the pool room, and he says maybe until April I won't start getting my relief checks. But the point being that you don't never say anything directly. People do not like to ask a man about his misfortune. You agree, Herb? Okay. Now, that's all part of the après-ski word today, and I think it's kind of interesting. So, man, the only reason I brought this up to you, I don't like to disillusion a lot of you. You've seen Jim Jensen. You've seen the guys like Jim McKay. He's always standing outlined against Garmisch-Partenkirchen, isn't he? You know, he says, "This is Jim McKay broadcasting you direct from Garmisch-Partenkirchen, where the men's double slalom, triple upper and over international ski event is about to be held. And number 17 is Fritz Gewundheit, who is the Austrian champion, is now up on the..." You know, you've seen this all the time. They're running an eternal champ. Have you noticed that hardly a day goes by but what 17 records don't fall? Especially in swimming. They're breaking, everybody who swims breaks a record. By the way, I broke a record in the pool once in Florida down there. Yeah. Do you know that I broke a record for two laps floating on my back sideways across the... A guy tied me. It's a new record. We call the Wide Wide World of Sports, but it was too long. It took me 2.5 hours. You're drifting with the tide is not easy, friends, especially in the pool. Ain't much of a tide, but I did it. This is WOR, speaking of swimming against the tide. This is WOR in New York,